radio show where country music gets up close and personal. Spend some time in the country and get to know our guests. Spend some time in the country where the music's the best. The latest news and memories, two great stories that get told.
Vancouver, British Columbia country artist Lisa Brokop, now living in Nashville, has climbed the country charts over the last 20 years with hits like Take That, She Can't Save Him, How Do I Let Go, Better Off Broken, and Wildflower. You've seen her videos on CMT. At age 19, she had the lead female role in the movie Harmony Cats. She's had her songs recorded by other country artists like Reba McEntire, Pam Tillis, and Terry Clark. Lisa now performs as one half of the duo The Jeffersons. The other half is her husband, singer-songwriter Paul Jefferson. It is my pleasure to welcome Lisa Brokop to the show. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing terrific. How about you?
I'm doing just great. Things are good.
Well, so much has happened in your career, so many hits. I mentioned just a few of them off the top there, and, of course, the great videos that you did over the years. We're going to cover so much of it, but let's maybe go back to the start. Reading in your bio, Lisa, I read that as early as age 7, and I think before that you were singing, but at age 7 you actually went on stage with your family, and you were doing everything from polkas to one of my favorite guys, Kenny Rogers classics.
That's for sure. Way back when it started, I think my very first performance ever, I was, like you said, about 7, and I was at a campsite with my family, and my mother knew that I could sing the Canadian National Anthem, so she, and I was very shy at that time, I was really shy, I wouldn't sing for anyone, but she knew that I could sing, and she said, why don't you sing it for everybody, and I really didn't want to, and I really didn't want to, and finally they talked me into it, so I sang it. And then at the very end of the anthem, my voice cracked, and I was just mortified. I thought that was just, you know, the worst thing in the world. But everybody stood up, and they were applauding, and they all loved it. And then I was kind of like, oh, wow, people liked it. And I think I was hooked from that on.
Yeah, I guess you get hooked, like you say, from an early age. If you get that kind of response, you want to have it happen again.
Sure, especially as a young kid. I mean, when you're getting that kind of approval, hey, why not do it again?
And who were some of the artists back then, around 7 and 8, to that age, early on, that you were listening to and that you were starting to get into?
Well, I loved Kenny Rogers. That was the first cassette tape I ever bought. I know a lot of people nowadays probably hardly know what cassettes are, but I had some of those. I loved Dottie West. I loved Barbara Mandrell. Anne Murray, of course, was a big influence. And just pretty much everything that was on the radio at the time, on country music radio, I loved all of it.
Now, you had a single to radio that did pretty good for your first single. You were around 17, and it was Daddy Sing to Me. Was that pretty exciting to be able to have that out at radio? And I'm sure you had the chance to hear yourself.
It was really cool. I remember when all that started, and my mother was actually... my parents were my managers at the time, and so my mom was the person who would get up and early in the morning to talk to all the radio stations and make sure that she could get to the ones on the East Coast from the West, and she'd get up real early and call them and say, hey, we've got this new single from Lisa Brokop and my daughter. As you can imagine, that probably sounded funny calling all these radio people, but we did get some airplay, and I remember hearing it on the radio for the first time. It was pretty exciting.
Now let's talk about the movie Harmony Cats. I remember this at the time, and you were just 19 years old. You were in this movie in the female lead role, and also a cover of the Tammy Wynette classic Stand By Your Man was on that soundtrack, and that got a lot of attention.
Yes, I love Tammy Wynette. I'm a huge fan of hers. I always have been. And Stand By Your Man is one of her greatest. And that movie was really a cool thing. It was a very unexpected thing. I always, you know, always done the singing. But acting was not something I had thought about. And the audition came up to go and be a part of that. And I went thinking, oh, you know, I probably won't get the part, but it'll be fun to go and I'll audition and, you know, be a good experience.
Right.
And then all of a sudden found myself with the lead female role in this movie. And much of the soundtrack was country music and with the Tammy Wynette song, Stand By Your Man. And that was really an awesome experience.
Now, what was your experience like back in 92 on the Ralph Emery Show, TNN, the Nashville network, such a great network at that time, playing country videos and having country talk shows? Time to Come Back Home was the video getting a lot of play, and you went down there for a showcase. That must have been a pretty exciting time as well.
When I think back on that, it was just, you know, it's been a while. It's been about 15, 20 years now, which
right.
I can't believe. But, yeah, that was an amazing time. I remember doing that showcase, and I remember being on Ralph Emery, too. That I would sit at home, and I'd watch that show all the time. I knew the characters and a lot of the artists that were on there. I was a big fan, so to get to do that was just amazing. And then going down to do a showcase, and, you know, showcases in Nashville, a lot of people don't realize are an interesting thing, because what they call a showcase room is basically a dark, dingy little bar-type atmosphere, and you try to pack a few people in there, where you'd think that when someone says, I'm going down to Nashville to showcase, it would be all glamorous and a great big, huge place, and it's just so not that way. but lots of fun, just the same. I got to work with some of the greatest top musicians here in Nashville, you know, right off the bat. I was pretty fortunate to get to do that. And then at that point, when I did that first showcase, I got my first record deal.
Now, when did songwriting come into play for you?
I did start writing when I was very young. I wrote my first song when I was 12 and wrote a fair bit. And then I kind of stopped for a while. I think I felt like, well, my confidence level was just really low as far as that went, and I would listen to the radio and think, oh, well, I could never write anything that could be on the radio, so I just won't do it. And I stopped for a while, and then got back into it later on, and, you know, and started co-writing, started learning about that in Nashville, and that's a real big thing, and started to learn from some of the people here that are just so awesome. And you know, it's always good to write with people that are better than you and learn from them. And then it became this sort of really important thing for me, which I would never have expected it would have gone that way. I always knew I was a singer and that was, you know, a performer. That was my thing. But the songwriter thing was a bit of a surprise. But suddenly I realized, hey, this is actually something that I'm supposed to be doing. I think, you know, this is good for me.
That's a great discovery, and I know it's exciting, you being a songwriter. Just it's always something new to create, and you get that high when you stumble upon a great idea and you finish the song.
It's an interesting thing. It happens in various different ways. You know, like I said, co-writing happens a lot here in Nashville, and I really enjoy that process, collaborating with someone else and getting their feedback and bouncing ideas off. And usually somebody will have either a title or a rhythm on the guitar or the piano or some kind of thought, maybe, hey, let's write a song about this kind of idea. And then we just kind of go from there and start with maybe a little melody or a rhythm and just see what flies out. And some days it just falls out of the sky, and other days it's just not going to come. So, you know, the funny thing is that it has a lot to do with chemistry and the person that you're writing with. And you just never know. It's a funny thing because it amazes me some days where at the end of the day we just go, wow, how do we get that? But weren't we lucky that we did?
Out of all the songs you've written, Lisa, now it's so hard to pick a favorite, I know, and you've written so many, but is there one that stands out for being special? Maybe it's a meaningful song. Maybe you got a lot of feedback on it from others because, you know, it made an impact in their lives.
Oh, boy, that is a tough question because I do have a lot of songs now over the years and all the different albums, but I think probably one of my favorites would be How Do I Let Go, which was a pretty big hit for me. Wrote that with Karen Taylor Good, and I was still a very new writer when that one came out, and it was probably one of my earlier co-writes with her, and And I remember feeling really good about that because I brought the idea to her and I had some of it written and we actually used it. And I just remember thinking, oh, wow, she likes what I wrote. And so, and then, of course, she helped me finish it and make it something really cool.
Yeah, How Do I Let Go is such a beautiful song. And the video for it is, it's a performance video, you at the piano.
Yes, I just love it. There's such an emotion. When it was written, Karen and I think we were both going through some relationship things at that time. And I think we captured a moment. And that video, too, it's one of my favorite videos as well. It just, there was really something emotional about it.
Yeah.
It's neat when you can capture that even in a video because, you know, it's hard to do that.
Now, I want to talk more about some of your songs and get stories behind them. I want to also get into the Jeffersons and so much more here with Lisa Brokop. But I want to turn now to a song of yours called Big Picture. A great video that goes with this as well. It's got a very meaningful message. It's up-tempo. It just kind of makes you feel good listening to it. Talk about the inspiration, Lisa, behind the writing of this song.
I wrote that with my co-writers, Joe Leathers and Jules Godard. And at the time we wrote it, they had kids, and we were talking about family and all that sort of thing. I didn't have my daughter at the time. So I was working off of their experience. And then now I have little Ivy, who's 3.5. And the song kind of has a whole new meaning. We've been performing it quite a bit in our live shows. And it almost feels like a new song again to me, which is kind of cool.
I think that is neat when a song that you've written had one meaning at one stage of life, and now it's got a deeper meaning. Does that happen with other songs of yours, too?
It has happened. It's funny how having a child will do that to you. And you know, getting married and just life happening, it's interesting how songs will kind of form different meanings when you thought you knew what it was all about when it was written, and then all of a sudden it's like, oh, it's got a whole new level.
Let's share the song now. This is Big Picture from Lisa Brokop on In the Country.
But my favorite piece ain't got a frame.
And that is Big Picture from my guest, Lisa Brokop, joining me on the line from Nashville. You can head over to her website, lisabrokop.com, as well as thejeffersonsmusic.com. We've got a song from Lisa and Paul in the show a bit later. I wanted to talk about some of the songs that you've had recorded by other artists that you've written, Lisa, including Reba. The song was Secret, that you co-wrote with Cyril Rawson, who's been a guest on the show in the past, and Ron Harbin, and Pam Tillis, a great song, Band in the Window, all about all the bands performing on Lower Broadway in Nashville. So those two artists, really big names. What was the feeling like in each case?
That was another one of those unexpected things. I've always loved songwriting, and I've written mainly for myself. So to have another artist feel like they love the song of mine enough to put on their own record, that's a really, really huge compliment. I mean, that's just a really, really awesome thing, and very surprising, especially hearing Reba sing Secret. There was a demo of the recording that we made here in Nashville, and she had heard that, and she really liked the song. To hear her singing some of the same licks that I sang in the demo, it's like, wow, that's just really the coolest thing.
The other song, the Pam Tillis song, were you pretty proud of that version of it? And, of course, you recorded it as well, Band in the Window.
Yes, I did. Pam's version is awesome. She's a great performer, one of the greats, and actually my good friend plays in her band. So it's been really fun to get to know Pam a little bit and see her perform. I got to watch her perform the song, Band in the Window, downtown on Broadway, which the song is about, the musicians and singers down on Broadway and the players and sort of the playing for tips and the how the music business works down there. And I got to go down
right.
And actually hear her sing the song while on Broadway at one of the little honky-tonks down there. It was really cool. That's coming full circle, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. Is there a song you have written, Lisa, that you think is perfect for another artist? In those cases, you had Reba, Pam, and Terry cut a song, but do you have one in your catalog that you think is perfect for a certain artist and you're just waiting to get the opportunity to pitch it?
Boy, that's a tough. I think I have several. I've said, boy, this would be perfect for so and so, for Trisha Yearwood,
right.
for Martina McBride, and now how many times we've said that. I don't know that I could pick actual single song, but yeah, I'm sure, you know, I think every one of us is a songwriter. Pretty much every song we write is like, oh, this would be perfect for so-and-so. Well, actually, there was a song, actually, it was on my record call. It was called Paper, Rock, Scissors. It was on my Hey, Do You Know Me record, and Trisha Yearwood, we had said, oh, this would be perfect for Trisha Yearwood, and she really did like it, but for whatever reason, it just, you know, didn't end up on her record, so that was one of those times.
And one of those songs you touched on earlier, the name of the album, Hey, Do You Know Me, such a beautiful song. The lyrics are so meaningful in it. There was a video for it as well, of course, that helped to tell the story. But tell us about that song. Again, it is just very meaningful, and I'm sure you've had feedback from people on, you know, how that song has touched them.
I have. I wrote Hey, Do You Know Me with Kim McLean, who's a really good friend of mine here in Nashville. And we've written a ton of songs together. We almost have a whole catalog just on our own. And it was one of those special ones that seemed to fall out. Kim is an awesome writer. And, you know, it's one of those ones that has stood the test of time because we wrote it a long time ago and sang it for a couple of years before it was even ever recorded and put on one of my records.
Hey, do you know me? I drive the city bus. See a lot of people who are down on their luck. I keep a pocket full of change those cannot pay. Do you know?
Now, on the other side of things, on the more up-tempo and fun side of things, the song I'd Like to See You Try. Tell us about that song.
That is a fun one and did really well for me across the country. And of course, the video was really fun. And the video had a guy in it who pretended to be kind of like a stalker person who was trying to get to me with flowers, and it was just a lot of fun, real colorful. And that's one of those driving your car, sing-along kind of things, and it's the song that we often have put at the very end of the show, kind of the closer, the one to get everybody going.
And it's got the great line, "I double dog dare you."
Well, to be honest, I didn't really know exactly what that meant. My co-writer, who it was, I think that was his line. He's real southern, I guess it's a southern statement, "double dog dare you." I had not actually heard that line myself, but apparently it's very popular down here in the South. So we put it in, and it seemed to sing well, so we left it in there, and it's a fun line.
Awesome. Another song, this was actually a duet that you did with Duane Steele. Great memories of hearing that on the radio, "Two Names on an Overpass." And in 1997, that actually won Vocal Collaboration of the Year, the CCMAs, for you and Duane. It's a beautiful song.
Armed with a can of red aerosol, trusting his life to that rope round his waist, dangling above the westbound passing lane, he wrote, "Jimmy Lee loves Becky Brown." Two names on an overpass, left defying feet of love. To this day, every time she drives past, she's taken back when she looks up. It was just her and him, things were so simple then. All you needed to prove love would last were two names on an overpass.
Yeah, I love that song. And Duane is such a great artist and songwriter. We actually have been out on the road. We were out in November with a group called the Troubadours, which was Duane, myself, and my husband Paul, and Wyatt Easterling, and Jake Matthews, and just going out as songwriters and singing our songs and telling the stories about how they were written. And so we actually did sing that song, "Two Names on an Overpass." We got to do it together, and I was fortunate enough to get to sing on it.
Now let's fast forward a bit to the Jeffersons, you and Paul. You perform, you've recorded a CD, The Jeffersons Volume 1. We've got a song to share from it coming up. You guys sound great together. Your voices really work, and you've fallen into the songwriting thing together pretty well, haven't you?
We have. It's been an interesting time because we got married about 5 years ago now, and we've always kind of shied away from doing music together, even though we've both had solo careers for a lot of years here in Nashville and been writers here. And we've always been a little bit afraid of that, combining, you know, relationship with business sort of thing. But it seemed to have found us. It just seemed like all of a sudden, well, there's no way around it. I think we need to do this together. And we've written a few songs together. And then we started performing together. He would come out on the road and come up and do a song or two. And we seemed to just get this really great response, more than what we thought. There was some kind of chemistry that I think that was just even beyond what we thought it would be. So it was like, okay, we'll do it.
You don't fight it when it's that good, right?
No, it's exactly. Some things you just got to go, you know, when they find you.
Paul, I want to talk about him for a moment. He co-wrote a song with his friend Keith Urban, a song called "You're Not My God," which was on the Golden Road CD, an early CD from Keith. And there's an acoustic version that you and Paul do, which people can check out at thejeffersonsmusic.com. A beautiful version of the song. He also co-wrote a song that I love from Aaron Tippin called "That's As Close As I'll Get to Loving You," a huge hit for Aaron. And I was reading as well, Paul was part of a Hank Williams tribute show.
He was, back when he first got started. He's from California, from San Francisco, as he says, the country music capital of the world, San Francisco. And he was involved in a play, and he played Hank Sr. And I actually never saw it. I didn't know Paul back then. Apparently he was really good, and he just really, he's got a great, great country voice, so he sings some of that Hank stuff just wonderfully, which is really fun in our live show. So, yeah, he did that for, I think, a couple of years, and then he came to Nashville, and he got signed to a record label, to Alma Sounds at the time, and a publishing deal, and, you know, we were kind of right in there. We both came to Nashville around the same time and had new record deals. We didn't know each other. We probably crossed paths many times, like literally walked in front of each other in
right.
the same circles, not even knowing it.
And a lot of
yeah.
this was documented on the, I think it was around 2009, CMT series called Our Song. Was that fun to do and get your story out there?
It was fun because we talked about our music, but we talked a lot about our personal background as well and what we had to go through as a couple. And it's a pretty interesting story. You know, it hasn't been all roses for us, which I guess it probably isn't for anybody really when it comes right down to it. But it's a path that we've had to take, and it's led us to a place that we're really happy with. And we've gotten a lot of great songs out of it, which we do in our show, and we like to talk about that. We like to be really real with our music, and you know, we're not really the lovey-dovey kind of duo. We like to be real. You know, a little bit of that's good, but we all know that that's not totally reality most of the time in a relationship. So, but
great.
It's really fun. Paul's awesome. He's a wonderful songwriter and he's a great performer. He's really funny. So that makes it fun for me up there too.
It's a beautiful song from Lisa and Paul, the Jeffersons, the duo. It's called Almost Like We Meant To here on In the Country.
Was a little too shy, you were not my type. We couldn't be any less alike. Still, we went out on that date that night, almost like we meant to. Were no sparks, not much chemistry. You even said what good friends we'd be. Still we kissed beneath the willow tree, almost like we meant to. Who
And that is a beautiful song from Lisa Brokop and Paul Jefferson, known as the Jeffersons. You can head to the websites, thejeffersonsmusic.com, lisabrokop.com as well, to see some videos, listen to some other song samples as well. One of the cover songs from the Jeffersons Volume 1, this debut CD from you and Paul, is a cover of The Wallflowers, One Headlight. I was on YouTube earlier and saw a video for it as well, which is really cool and different. What went into choosing that cover song?
Well, Paul has band, or had a band before the Jeffersons called Hilljack that he did some touring with and recording, and they used to do that song. And it's always been a favorite of Paul. I've always loved it too, and I've always loved Paul's version of it. So we thought, hey, well, let's put it on our Jeffersons record and see how that goes. So we did, and I love it. And it's one of those songs that most people have heard it at least, you know, once or twice before from the original version,
right,
from Jacob Dylan. So it's fun to do it live because people kind of start bobbing their heads and they want to sing along. So and it's got that driving beat that's just really cool.
Now, what are some of the other cover songs, Lisa, you and Paul will do in concert? Any that stand out? Any we would know? But I'm sure we would.
We like to do Feeling Called the Blues, the old Hank song.
Right.
Paul does that really well, and we love to sing a lot of harmony with that. And, of course, One Headlight. I'm trying to think. Oh, we have often done the song Together Again, the old, you know, Buck Owens. Well, I guess I was going to say Buck Owens version, but it could be Emmy Lou Harris. There's many, many versions of the song. So we put our own twist on it, and we do it kind of like a duet. And we both just love that old style of music so much, so it's fun to incorporate that.
And when you're at your shows with Paul and with the other artists that you are up there performing with, I guess it's a real thrill when you can do the singer-songwriting thing and it's just you and the guitar and really getting to the heart of the song. And do you find that people in the audience really enjoy hearing, you know, the stories about the songs and how they were written?
We have found that people really do love that. In Nashville, it's kind of a standard thing. I think we're a little bit spoiled from it. The Bluebird Cafe is, you know, the popular place here in Nashville, and it happens every night. You go and there's, you know, four writers in a round, and they just have their guitars, and they tell stories about the songs they've written, and occasionally you hear one that's a hit, and you're hearing it from the writer that's written it. And when we go up to Canada, that's not so much the norm. People haven't been as familiar with that. So we've been doing a lot of touring in that style, and people are just, they're kind of amazed because they didn't know what to expect when they've heard, oh, well, it's going to be Lisa and Paul and just two of them, and they didn't really know what to expect. And they just love it. They love hearing the stories about, you know, where the ideas came from, and you know, of course, we cut up with each other and laugh back and forth, and people really feel like they're getting the inside scoop with everything.
Now, as far as duet partners go, of course, your current and favorite duet partner is your husband, Paul. Dwayne Steele in the past with the song Two Names on an Overpass. Other duet partners come to mind, Lisa, that you could hear yourself singing with and that you might like to down the road?
Oh, boy, let's see. So many great singers out there. Well, hey, how about Johnny Reed? Now, there's a voice.
Yeah.
He's a great singer. I think we could do an awesome duet. Or, you know, it's funny, today I was just talking with some friends about Michael Bublé, the artist, and I thought, wouldn't that be a cool duet? We were just talking about that. And I love that style of music, because to me, jazz, that kind of jazz music is not that far away from some of the old country, some of the Western swing. You know, it's just a few steps away, I think. So that'd be cool.
Universe. Yeah, somebody from a different genre like Michael to jazz it up. Or, as you said, Johnny, I've seen him at Massey Hall a few months back now. And, I mean, not only got a great voice, but such a great entertainer.
Oh, yeah. He's just charisma just like I've never seen. Just, you know, I remember the first time he won that award at the CCMAs, the New Artist Award. And even from that point, it's like, boy, that he really has it. He just lights up the stage.
Yeah. Definitely. I'm sure that sooner or later he's going to break past country and do some crossover stuff just because he's that good. And other people from other genres, they're going to enjoy his music.
Yeah, for sure. And why not? I mean, it's, you know, when you can do different styles, I think that would be great.
Yeah. Speaking of the people like Johnny and the Canadian community down there in Nashville, I've talked to so many different artists living down in Nashville now, or even ones who visit there, but there's all the great Canadians down there, singer-songwriters. I know you're good friends with Victoria Banks. She's been on the show a few times in the past. Talk about that, the community down there, friends you've got who are from Canada.
It's amazing how many Canadians are down here. Actually, there's new ones coming down every day, and if you go out to an event where maybe a Canadian artist is playing, you're bound to see like a whole pile of them. They all come out to support each other, which is really cool. And we all write together too. I write a lot with Patricia Conroy, who's a fellow Canadian artist, and
yes.
and Victoria and I are great buddies. So you know, it's funny though. Victoria and I have written some, but not as much as you might think, because we're such good pals that you know, there's three or four of us girls that get together and we end up just having coffee and gabbing and you know, chatting about this and that, and we never get any work done.
Now, another artist, and I believe you were at a charity event that she puts on, Tennille. She was on a few weeks back, the Alberta Country Music Association's Female Artist of the Year. She just released a new album called Light. And you've hung out with her, of course, and played music with her.
Yes, I have. She is just an amazing woman. She's like an angel of some kind, I'm pretty sure. She just, what she does for her community and helping people. We got to go and do her event, Big Hearts for Big Kids, just a while back, and it's really neat when you can support something like that. That is just, you know, you're really doing a good thing, and she's such a great lady. And we've actually had the chance to write some songs together too. She's a very talented young lady. I expect to see really big things coming from her.
Definitely, yeah. The new album is terrific, and as you said, she's just a great person, and
yeah.
Just got a real positive way about her. I mean, it's just amazing. Back when you were early on in your career, your producer at that time was the great Tom McKellop. Of course, his daughters now have grown up and become the big hit group One More Girl. Did you know the Carly and Britt back in those days?
I did. You know, when I first started working with Tom, his girls were just little kids. So, I'm sorry. They were just little kids, and they would come to the show, and they were just such big fans, and they'd want to sing along to the music, and lo and behold, here they are, about the same age I was when I came to town, with a record deal, and writing songs, and doing the same thing. So they were actually just in town not that long ago, and we got to visit and chat a little bit, and really talented girls. So it's kind of fun to watch what they're doing, and see it from my vantage point, where I've been where they're at, being brand new, it's fun to watch them do it.
I'll bet. What piece of advice would you give, Lisa, to new artists out there that might be in their teens and are, you know, have a good voice and are writing songs and want to pursue this? What kind of things would you pass on to them that might help them along?
Well, I would say the biggest thing is you have to really be sure that you love this and that it's, you know, you have a passion for it that you just cannot get away from, because it's a really tough business. It also has some great rewards. There can be some really tough things that go with it too. It's not an easy route to take, but I certainly understand that passion that a person might have that you just have to follow it. I heard some great advice from Mike Reed once at the Bluebird Cafe. I was sort of standing in a group of people, and there was a young girl who came up to him and asked him for some advice of, you know, what you should do. And he said, well, is there anything else that you love that you think you could do that would make you happy? And if there isn't, well, then you should be in the music business. But if there's anything else you can do, then go do that. But if you can't, you just got to do it. Well, you've got the passion for it, and you should, you know, follow your dreams and go for it. So I thought that's interesting. You know, it's really got to be, you've got to be real driven. And I would encourage anybody to just really try and stay grounded, whatever that means, whether it's with family, with friends, reminding yourself of what's important in life, because that can really be, you know, that can fall by the wayside easily.
I want to talk about a couple more of your songs, Lisa, some of the big hits, a couple of my favorites. One is She Can't Save Him.
She can remember the man that he was. Still shed her tears for what he's become. She can live in that house
I love the lyric of that. And I've had some really wonderful moments with that song, especially back when we did perform it quite a bit in the show, and people would come up and say, you know, because of that song, I've been sober for, you know, a month or a year, or to realize just what music can do for someone and how it can affect them. And for those of you that don't know, the song is about alcoholism and not just about the person who is the alcoholic, but about the people that it affects and the family
right.
members. And so it's an important message, and to have that kind of feedback, you just go, oh, wow, that really makes it worthwhile being out here on the road and doing what I do.
Another song called Take That from earlier on in your career. I love that song. It's just so catchy. The hook of it's terrific. How did you feel about that song when you recorded it?
That was written by Gary Burr and Tom Shapiro. And it was just one of those fun songs. You know, it's funny that I loved the song. I really liked it. I remember when we went in the studio and we recorded it. And I didn't expect it to be, you just never know which one is going to be the bigger hit. And I just, you know, wasn't thinking that one was going to be it. And it was. It was the one that people really seemed to grasp onto. It just had that thing, whatever that is. I wish, you know, if we could describe it and know exactly what that is, I guess that would be helpful. But it's hard to know sometimes. And so that's, you know, that's been the song that people still yell out from the crowd every so often that they want to hear.
I know exactly what you've done. No use trying to deny it. You ain't fooling anyone. I don't need a sunny day to see the light. The proof.
That must be the wonderful part and also the tough part of picking singles and choosing to record songs. As you said, there's a magic in certain songs, and it's hard to put your finger on it to know if it's there or not. I mean, you might believe in a song and maybe it doesn't do as well as another one that you like but didn't think, you know, it had that extra little bit to it.
It is. It's very difficult, and it's important to when we're trying to decide which song is going to be the one that's, you know, sent out to radio stations. It's important to think about it from a listener's point of view, because we see music differently because we're writers and we're so close to it. It's different for us. So you kind of got to think about, well, what does the person think that doesn't write songs, and what do they want to hear? What subject matter do they want to hear about? So it's hard to separate sometimes.
Yeah, and so many times, sometimes what will take it to the next level of song, a great song, is the production and maybe the harmonies, just all those little touches that take a great song and make it into a hit song.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes you just never know what combination is going to be it, whether it's a certain harmony line that just creates that magic moment, or it's a certain line of words in the chorus, the hook, as we call it. Yeah, and, you know, even the so-called professionals that seem, you know, are supposed to be the ones that know what the hits are, you know, you just never know. You know, we're all guessing here.
Now, what's ahead for the Jeffersons, for you and Paul? Is there another album?
Well, there probably will be. At this point, actually, it turns out I'm going to do another Lisa Brokaw project. I have decided that, you know, it's actually been probably about 20 years since I've been in Nashville, so I'm thinking, you know, that's almost like an anniversary kind of thing. So I'm thinking maybe it's time to put something out that's, you know, kind of celebrating all of these years in the music business, you know, combining everything. So, yeah, it's going to be another Lisa Brokaw project with Paul Jefferson on it. He'll be producing it. I'm very excited. Been writing a lot of songs and making plans.
It's been such a pleasure having you on the show, sharing the songs, going back over some of the great memories and hearing the stories behind the songs. Thanks so much for being part of the show, Lisa.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
It has been my pleasure. My guest this evening has been country artist Lisa Brokaw. Be sure to head to lisabrokaw.com or thejeffersonsmusic.com to learn more. I'm Dave Woods. It's been another big night in the country.